show is brought to you by our friends at FanDuel. Remember, you can get $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win in the NFL. Remember, FanDuel.com, America's number one sportsbook. New customers get $300 in bonus bets if your $5 bet wins. You can join today at FanDuel.com. Join America's number one sportsbook. You want to lock that in? Go to FanDuel.com today and tell them you heard about it on the Believe in Ole Miss podcast. And now, back to the show.
And welcome into today's show, the Believe in Ole Miss podcast. Of course, brought to you by our good friends, Debbie Johnson Realty and T. White. I have a very special guest today, Chris Doering of the SEC Network, kind enough to give us a few minutes today. And Chris, quite topical to have you on, as there's a game in Oxford on Saturday that I know you'll be paying very close attention to. But thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, I was mentioning to you before I came on, there's not much more that I love than being on our football final show on Saturday nights, having everybody finish their Saturday game days with us. But being in Oxford on Saturday would be one place that I would love to have the opportunity to be. I love Oxford anyway, but Florida and Ole Miss, two of my favorite programs playing one another, would be nice to be there.
Well, we'll get to Ole Miss and Florida and the season soon enough, but since we've got you, I'd love to take you back to high school and, you know, growing up there in Gainesville, probably an easy decision to play for the Gators. But what people may not know, second team All-American, but you were a walk-on. That was phenomenal for me to find that out. Tell me a little bit about growing up in Gainesville and choosing to play for the Gators.
Yeah, so I grew up here, born here, lived here all through my high school years, and my parents, both Florida graduates, so lived and died orange and blue, and went to not only every football game, but basketball, baseball, gymnastics, everything in my life revolved around Florida athletics. And so, you know, I always had dreams of playing at Florida. Chris Collinsworth was my idol when he was a Gator, and followed him throughout his Florida and Cincinnati Bengal career and into the broadcasting world. So, you know, I had always thought it was going to come to fruition where I'd get that chance to play for Florida. It didn't quite have the same path that that I expected. I tell everybody I had the greatest high school career of any high school student ever. I got a chance to be All-State in football, basketball, and baseball. We won the state basketball tournament. I was the MVP of the state basketball finals, and I got to be Sky Masterson in the musical theater production of Guys and Dolls. So I got a chance to do everything in high school, and yet you mentioned it. The decision was easy. The decision was easy where I wanted to play, but not a whole lot of other people wanted me anywhere else. So I didn't really have scholarship offers to any other school, so walking on at Florida was kind of – you know, the best option at the time, which I'm grateful that it was something where I wasn't given a scholarship somewhere else, because I probably would have taken it. And in the end, this was not only the opportunity to live out a childhood dream, but one that caused me to earn it and appreciate it a little bit more when I was given that scholarship and ultimately had the success I did at Florida.
You know, it's very fitting we're talking to you today. There's a linebacker that plays for Ole Miss not a lot of people know about. His name is Andrew Jones, number 44. And he's gotten a lot of play as of the last couple of games because Lane made mention, you know, I asked him, where did Andrew Jones come from? He was a transfer, graduate transfer from Grambling. And all of a sudden, he's playing a ton at weak side linebacker. And Lane basically said, well, we couldn't get him off the field in practice. And when we couldn't get him off the field in practice, he was making so many plays, we put him in the game. Then all of a sudden, we can't get him out off the field in the game. How was that process for you walking on as a freshman? You're redshirted, and then, as you say, the rest is history. The Hall of Fame, you made it to the NFL, second-team All-American. You had an incredible career, but I'd love to go back to when you were a freshman, you kind of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and now all of a sudden, a couple of years later, you're a stalwart in the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best part of life sometimes is not knowing the challenges you're going to face before you face them, right? If you knew the path was going to be as difficult as it sometimes ends up being, maybe we would choose something easier. But for me, you know, I dreamt about being a Gator, and so getting a chance to put that uniform on and run out there on the field was a dream come true. And I think it's even more so true today. Very few players know the history and know the former players and have the same emotional investment in the program they play for. But for me, I could speak to all the history. I could speak to the struggle of you know, losing, you know, the key games when Florida needed to try to win an SEC championship. And so to get a chance to be there during that run under Coach Spurrier was really special. But, you know, again, you know, it caused me to have to work a little harder, prove myself more. And then, you know, ultimately when you get those things, you don't take them for granted. And it kind of set the course for the rest of my life. You know, I got drafted, you said a second team All-American, first team All SEC, held the career touchdown record for 25 years in the league. And yet, you know, I was supposed to be drafted in the third or fourth round, according to Mel Kiper. I didn't go until the sixth round in 10 years in the NFL. I got cut 22 different times. I got cut 10 different times. I got moved across the country 22 different times. So all these things happen where you learn a skill or learn an ability to persevere that sets you up for the next place in life. And I really feel like that's what happened in Florida that set me on the course to the NFL and then beyond what I'm doing in the broadcasting world, what I do in the business world here in the mortgage office I have as well.
You know, it's funny. You talk about how much you grew and learned so much as a younger athlete there at Florida. And then all of a sudden, 1993 happens. You're playing against Kentucky, what many would call the catch. Can you walk me through that game? Mm-hmm. You went 24-20. Your quarterback's Danny Werfel. Take me through that offensive progression, because you caught a lot of big balls in your career, but that one kind of stands out to a lot of people, especially some kids in Mississippi that watched you play.
Let me start back a little early. I'll take you through the history, because I walked on in 1991, got redshirted that year. In 92, I made the travel squad, so I was one of the top eight receivers. Caught my first pass against Tennessee in a blowout loss there in Knoxville to the Vols. And then the next year, going through 2-a-days, we're in the middle of camp, and after the morning practice, coach calls the team up and makes the announcement that he's putting me on scholarship. You know, at that point, I thought, man, this is amazing. The coolest part about it was my teammates were more happy than I was, and that showed to me that they recognized the sacrifice and the work that I had put in to get that scholarship. And then, you know, we play the first game of the season a couple of weeks later, catch four passes in a big win over a directional school. The next week, September 11th, 1993, we go to Kentucky. Coach Berger tells me before the game, I'm starting. And here I am. You know, I went from a walk-on a couple weeks earlier to now starting in SEC play. Catch my first career touchdown reception in the beginning of the fourth quarter. And I thought that was the pinnacle of everything that I dreamt of as a kid. Here I am, you know, playing for my childhood team, catching a touchdown in the SEC competition. And little did I know I'd have a game-winning catch with 3 seconds left that would kind of change my entire life. Mm-hmm. I caught 29 touchdowns after that, but the one that everybody kind of associates Chris Doering with was the game winner in Lexington that night. And so it was a life-changing catch. You go to class on Monday and seeing my name in headlines in the school newspaper, people are recognizing me. I got a professor that's talking about Chris Doering and what a great story of overcoming obstacles and persevering. And he had no idea I was even in this class. So it was literally an example of overnight success and fame and recognition.
Do you remember, and I'd love to take you back, you caught the touchdown against Kentucky, you overcome so much walking on. Do you remember that first conversation you had with your family, who are lifelong Gators, when you caught the touchdown pass? And I'd love to get your thoughts on how special it was to share that with them.
Yeah, well, my parents happened to be there that night. And, you know, my parents didn't miss many of my games ever throughout my childhood and high school careers. So they were there that night. And unfortunately, my mom didn't see it. I guess she said she had her head in her hands when the play occurred. So she didn't get a chance to see it live, although she was there. And you know, obviously, you know, you think about the number of hours that my parents spent supporting me, my dad throwing the football with me out in the street. You know, as a kid, my dad would take me over to Florida Field, and you used to be able to go on the field when it was AstroTurf, and we'd kick field goals, and I'd act like I was Chris Collinsworth. So there was really a lot of investment from my parents there as well. Obviously, we all want our kids to be successful, but, you know, I could see, you know, how for them, as much as they put in the time and effort to drive me around to the boys club or the city league games or whatever we were doing, and watching me play for the school they went to, that they brought me up loving, and then to have the chance to catch something like that while they were there, just a really special moment.
Looking at making the decision to go to Florida, obviously back then, FSU, Free Shoes University, Steve Spurrier, you can't spell citrus without UT. The fun of following him from afar, I'd love to know what was it like playing for Coach Spurrier the relationship that you're able to form with him. And I
Yeah.
can only imagine walking on to becoming a second team All-American there. That relationship probably was really cool and probably continues to this day.
Yeah, it does for sure. You know, outside of my parents, there's nobody that has been more influential and impactful than Coach Berger has been in my life. You know, and I talk all the time about coaches are basically teachers, right? I mean, football is a vehicle for teaching kids about life, all the lessons that you can learn. And Coach Berger may have coached, you know, a couple thousand people in his career, but that reach, you know, my kids are being indirectly coached by Coach Spurrier because of the lessons that I learned. The people that work for me here in the mortgage office are being inspired by things that inspired me from Coach Spurrier. So, like, I don't think great coaches are more than wins and losses. You know, great coaches are ones that help shape great adults that can, you know, can help impact so many other people in their communities. And I feel like that's what Coach Spurrier was. You know, the great thing about Coach is that he didn't care if you were a walk-on or a scholarship guy. He wanted guys that would play the way that they were coached. And he would talk an awful lot about John Wooden and some of the Woodenisms. And one of the things that he said is that, you know, you talk about, you know, players that coaches love are guys that play the way they're coached and that are in phenomenal condition. And I think I caught his attention as a freshman when I won the conditioning test. Blew the field away, and from that point, you know, he knew who I was more, and you know, I think the consistency with which I practiced, the way that I was able to execute the things that he had taught in the meeting rooms on the practice field, those are the things that got me the opportunity. And then once the opportunity presented itself, fortunately, I took advantage of it and never looked back. And in my senior year, I caught 17 touchdowns. I was, you know, first team All SEC, second team All American. I remember hearing an interview where, when I broke the record, the SEC record, you know, they asked Coach Spurrier if he was surprised by that, and he said, "No, I'm the one calling the plays." And so he was calling the plays for me, knowing that he had confidence that I was going to make the plays when given the opportunity, and that really meant a lot to me.
This is Kevin Harlan, and tonight, the NBA on Prime crew and I are back with another exciting Emirates NBA Cup doubleheader. It all tips off with Bam Adebayo and the Miami Heat taking on Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks in an East Coast rivalry. Then, Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors go toe-to-toe with Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs. It all comes your way on Prime. And if you're not a Prime member, that's not a problem. Sign up for a free 30-day trial to get started today. The Heat and Knicks, the Warriors and Spurs. Coverage starts tonight at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, only on Prime. Restrictions apply. See amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Progressive loves to help people make smart choices. That's why they offer a tool called Auto Quote Explorer that allows you to compare your Progressive car insurance quote with rates from other companies. So you save time on the research and can enjoy savings when you choose the best rate for you. Give it a try after this episode at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're living with diabetic macular edema, or DME, then you know it's not just about losing your vision. It's about losing access to life and the cherished moments that make life meaningful. With Vabysmo Faricimab SVOA, you can improve and protect your vision and rediscover that connection to the world. Vabysmo is an FDA-approved treatment for individuals with DME that improves vision and offers the chance of up to 4 months between treatments, which means getting back to doing the activities you cherish. Vabysmo is an eye injection. Don't take it if you have an infection, active eye swelling, or are allergic to it. Vabysmo could cause eye infection, retinal detachment, temporary increase in eye pressure, an uncommon risk of heart attack or stroke, or severe swelling of blood vessels in the eye. Report changes to vision or eye pain to your retina specialist right away. So ask your doctor about Vabysmo as soon as you notice any vision changes. Visit Vabysmo.com or call 1-833-IG for patient assistance programs, cost, and full prescribing information.
In cybersecurity, speed is survival. SOC Radar is your early warning system, monitoring external threats to your company to spot risks before breaches. SOC Radar delivers proactive threat intelligence with actionable insights for holistic exposure management across attack surfaces, dark web, and brand protection. With automated detection, triage, and investigation, SOC Radar is your business's frontline defense. Start your free trial at socradar.io/podcast. That's socradar.io/podcast. Don't wait.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, Devontae Smith broke that record back in 2020. Of course, he played for Alabama. That was an incredible record, all kind of Gator records that you had. I'd love to ask you, too, looking at Florida, the football program, you know, here in Mississippi, we began following it in the early 90s. Shane Matthews, the quarterback from down in Pascagoula, would choose to go to Florida. So all of us kids in Mississippi would kind of begin following Florida. And then all of a sudden, here comes Spurrier. Here come all the winning, Danny Werfel. And then all of a sudden, to win the national championship and kind of the ball rolls along. You mentioned Chris Collinsworth, and I want to touch on this real quick. Any relationship there? Because I know you mentioned him twice, and he obviously made an impact on you, both on the field and in the booth.
Yeah, I got a chance. You know, there's a picture of me with him probably when I'm 5 or 6 years old at fan photo day on the field. You know, we've kind of stayed in touch over the years. When I caught the game winner, he sent a telegram, which, you know, can you imagine the days when people were sending telegrams? But the telegram said, "Hey, Chris, congratulations. I thought you were trying to be like me. You better start dropping more." I can remember it, you know, vividly right now, and just very self-deprecating. But this is a guy that it was a great role model for me and what he did playing at Florida, playing at Cincinnati, getting into broadcasting. I feel like I've followed in his footsteps a lot. And even today, you know, he's one of the preeminent broadcasters in all of sports, and does such a great job that there's, you know, if I could emulate just a tenth of what he's doing and the success he's having, it would be amazing.
Yeah, going back to the Florida job, you know, it's seen its ups and downs, and this whole new world that you talk about every Saturday on the SEC network panel, which is fantastic, by the way. I told you off air that it's akin to back when Chris Berman and Tom Jackson did primetime. I mean, it's kind of the show that we all watch. For people like me, that I'm tuned in, I'm at a game every single Saturday. Well, the first thing I do when I get home is flip on the network so I can kind of get caught up on the day. And it's a perfect 30-minute encapsulation. You and the entire crew do a great job breaking the games down. You bet. In any event, the Florida job is, like I said, seen its ups and downs, the new world of NIL. Where, in your opinion, is that job right now on the mountain of jobs in the SEC, and they're kind of in limbo right now with Scott Strickland, a new coach, Lane Kiffin, insert coach here. Where is the job right now to you?
I still think Florida is one of the best jobs in the country. You know, I look at it's changed, right? You know, people talk about, well, you know, this school has won championships more recently. I don't think that even matters anymore. I mean, we're watching Indiana and Vanderbilt have chances to get into the college football playoff field, you know, sooner than some of the blue bloods in this league will have a chance to do so. I think it comes down to commitment. You know, we talked about the commitment from the athletic department down in terms of what they're allocating to coaches pool, the assistants, what they're allocating to recruiting. You know, now there's a little bit more structure with the congressional settlement and what schools are paying, but the allocation, that percentage of what they're allowed to spend on athletes, you know, how it's given to football versus other sports is another factor. I think the city itself, where Gainesville, no state tax in Florida, the weather, the proximity to some of the best football players in high school in the entire country, that's a big part of it as well. So I still think that Florida is one of the best jobs around. And it's just back to being a little bit of a sleeping dog the way it was before Coach Spurrier took over.
Yeah. You know, Chris, on the teleconference today, we record on Wednesday, the teleconference today, Lane Kiffin made mention that five coaches that had some of the toughest schedules in the country are now fired. Are we reaching a point in the world of college football to where this is kind of going to level out with the buyouts being crazy, with the we have to win immediately or you're getting fired, the winning percentages are just out the roof. We've seen Brian Kelly get let go. We've seen, in your case there at Florida, Dan Mullen was let go with, in large part, a pretty good winning percentage up against other jobs. Do you think at some point we're going to kind of level some things out with buyouts and coaches having these incredible expectations?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously talking a lot about that as it relates to the dynamic in Baton Rouge with when the governor's getting involved in Louisiana talking about, you know, we got to change the structure of how coaches are compensated and eliminate these buyouts and shorten the length of the contract. Yeah, I don't know who in terms of the top coaches out there is going to want to go take that job with as much dysfunction as it seems like there is around it currently. So maybe they have to go with a young up-and-comer that doesn't require as much of a buyout. Somebody's got to change the landscape and set the precedent. I just don't see it. As long as these boosters want to win, they're going to put the money forth to get the best coaches, and when it's not working, to pay the buyouts. And so, again, I go back to Indiana. If Kurt Cignetti or Clark Lee at Vanderbilt can have success now, that even further ramps up the sense of urgency that I think some of the bigger programs have and the impatience that the boosters that support those programs have.
Chris, I want to take you back 5 years, 2020, and Lane Kiffin was coaching down in Florida. At this place, it was Florida Atlantic, and could not, for the most part, get, you know, the pick of the litter. There were a couple of places that he might have landed, but he chose Ole Miss over Arkansas. Now, I'm not kidding. I think I counted 8 different major jobs, both NFL and college, that Lane was at the top of the list. Not necessarily where's he going to coach, but what have you enjoyed seeing Lane evolve over the last 5 years? And what are some things that have jumped out to you, maybe off the field and on the field, that you've seen him grow as a head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a great pairing between Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. You know, I give Ole Miss a lot of credit for taking a chance. And it doesn't seem like it now, but they were taking a chance on him at the time, you know, with a lot of moving around from him and the reputation that he gained at Alabama, and people not necessarily, you know, feeling like he was the most stable candidate. They took a chance on him. They supported him. Keith Carter has done a great job of giving him every resource he needed to be successful. So, you know, I don't know what happens with him in the future, but I do know that I've watched him kind of grow up, and I know everybody's seen the documentaries and all, but I just remember, you know, the showman that he was, the grab your popcorn, the go for it on fourth down every single time. It was careless, you know, and I think he's become much more mature in the way that he coached. Now, we saw some – I don't think you can completely eliminate that bug out of you. We saw it against Oklahoma where they throw Austin Simmons in for no reason down inside the 5-yard line on a couple plays, or you go for it on fourth and one at your own 25. But I do think he's become more measured in the chances that he takes. Looking at it at the end of the LSU game, running the football the way that they did, you know, kicking field goals at times and not necessarily trying to score touchdowns every possession. So I do think that he's grown up in the way that he approaches coaching the in-game situations and the way that he relates to his players. I think there's a real bond there that has been created. And he's talked about it, how he looked at his dad and the way that his – former players talked about his dad after he passed. It just, you know, I think he's finding, you know, deeper meaning and having real relationships now, as opposed to maybe relationships that were helped to get him to the next place in the coaching climb.
I had a conversation this morning on an interview, and someone asked me about this particular Ole Miss team, so I'll ask you. One thing that I kind of said was, you date back to the 1997 Tennessee game. Our Tennessee football team with Peyton Manning at quarterback. They had this incredible roster. Obviously, we know they would lose games, not win the national championship. The following year, it's kind of a rebuild. T. Martin, national championship. Not to say by any stretch that Ole Miss is going to win the national championship this year, but last year the roster was loaded, and Jackson Dart and had everything in front of you. Lose Kentucky, LSU, and, of course, Florida. This year, it feels like that's not the case. Ole Miss has won those close games. Maybe not as talented a roster, but here they are set with only one loss, as to Georgia, with the world in front of them, with Florida and Mississippi State in a possible playoff berth. What does this team what have they done this year to only lose the one game? What has stood out to you, and what do they have to do over the next couple of weeks to try to get into that college football playoff?
You're right. I mean, when Jackson Dart decided to return and everybody else kind of fell in line, it felt like, you know, the college version of The Last Dance, where everybody, hey, we're all in. It's playoff or bust. And then, you know, you lose that game at home to Kentucky. You lose late in the season at Florida, and those, you know, playoff hopes are dashed. I do think there was a lot of pressure when you have that much, you know, riding on the season. It felt like, you know, at times they were very stiff and playing scared at times. Well, I think this year they haven't had that. I mean, obviously going through that disappointment has helped, you know, Coach Kiffin and the coaches on the staff as well, I think, approach things differently. They found lightning in a bottle with Trinidad Chambliss, unexpected, you know, leader of that team now. There was a lot of talent there, I think, and everybody thinks of Lane Kiffin being the portal king, but I also think he does a great job of recruiting high school kids and building a foundation. That defensive line has a lot of players. I said it early in the season, you may not know the names, but there are a lot of quality players on that defensive line. And I think there's something special. I've been on teams that are well connected, and Vanderbilt's a connected team, but I also think this Ole Miss group is very well connected. They like each other and play hard for one another as well.
Chris, before we get you out of here, thanks again for joining us. It's been a great conversation. What are you expecting on Saturday, and what's it going to take for the Gators under Coach Billy Gonzalez to get a win, and what are you kind of expecting from Ole Miss over the next couple of weeks with Florida and Mississippi State in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be hard for Florida coming off that disappointing loss to Georgia. You know, I thought it was going to be hard with, you know, all that's happened for them to get their energy level back up. They look like they quit in that one. I don't think they'll quit in this. This is a great challenge, and, you know, I'm sure a lot of people talking about where Lane Kiffin is going to be next year, and it very well could be an audition for some of these guys in a way. So I expect Florida to play hard. You know, I think they've got a really talented roster, and that's what's been so frustrating for Florida fans is that they have so many good players. They just haven't been able to put it together. You've seen moments of it, but haven't seen it for a full 60 minutes. I don't expect Florida to win this game, but I do think that they'll be much more competitive than they were on Saturday against Kentucky.
He's Chris Doyne, does a fantastic job on the SEC Network. All-American wide receiver at Florida, played in the National Football League. Kind enough to join us here for a couple minutes today. Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brad. I enjoyed it, man.
In cybersecurity, speed isn't just an advantage, it's survival. SOC Radar is your early warning system against hackers. SOC Radar continuously monitors the external threat landscape, so cyber threats hit your radar before they hit your business. But it doesn't stop there. SOC Radar empowers your company with proactive exposure management, actionable insights that help you stay ahead of cybercriminals and minimize business impact. And with SOC Radar's holistic exposure management, you get complete visibility, attack surface monitoring, dark web monitoring, threat intelligence, and brand protection are all unified in one powerful platform. SOC Radar isn't just another tool. It's your frontline defense in a world where threats never sleep. Start your free trial at socradar.io/podcast. That's socradar.io/podcast. Don't wait.